Hello, and welcome to the Villains and Monsters podcast, where true crime meets thrilling fiction and dark minds come together to talk about all things sinister and psychotic. I'm Cassie Sharp, suspense and thriller author, and your host. Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of Villains and Monsters. Today we are going to be reading 2 more chapters from my debut novel, Where the Shadow Lies. Today will be chapters 7 and 8. And today is Sunday, April 12th, 2020, as I'm recording this. So last episode, you heard chapters 5 and 6, and I'll recap those just very briefly. And then I'll talk about what I'm working on, and then we'll get to chapter 7 and 8. Chapter seven is pretty lengthy, so this is going to be a little bit of a longer episode, but bear with me. Okay, so the recap for chapters 5 and 6, they were both in Jael's point of view this time. It was her birthday, basically broken into 2 chapters, and basically, Jael, we learn, has a lot of guilt for the lies that she's told, the lies that she's telling, and a lot of shame for how she feels that makes her not as good of a mother as she should be, as she wants to be. She and Xander have told Jason that they are dating, but it's fake, obviously. That was Xander's idea because he wasn't sure what to say about why his mom was talking to Xander. He didn't want to out her for saying that she wanted somebody to start following him. So that's the only thing he came up with. And Jael plays along. And because of that, Xander feels bad about it, and he agrees to watch Jason for free. So he has just agreed to start following him to see what the fuck is going on, and why he has this letter from his father. So, what I'm working on right now is, still my book, and I'm finishing up the first chapter now. It's going to be a fun book. I'm excited about it. And I'll be releasing the next episode of the Lex Factor this week. If you are one of my newsletter subscribers, you'll be getting that. The Lex Factor is kind of like the secret story club that subscribers of my newsletter get monthly. So if you want to sign up for that, I will put the link in the show notes. And then I am starting to do research for a new blog, a new true crime blog post. I already have some on my website, but this will be a new one. So that's what I'm working on, and I'm excited, and I'm having a lot of fun. Right, so let's get into the next 2 chapters of Where the Shadow Lies. Chapter 7. Monday morning brought with it dark, ominous clouds. Jason had not slept much the night before. His mind hadn't allowed the rest, so engrossed it was in suspicion. He had stayed home after he returned from Mom's birthday dinner and hadn't left since. He'd spent his entire Sunday evening cleaning his home and rearranging furniture and writing. Once everything was put back in order and spotless, he'd picked up a pen and fished his notebook out of his closet, the notebook he'd not touched since high school. Words had been swirling in his head ever since he'd read that damn letter. When he'd opened his notebook in the dim silence of his kitchen, he set them free. They did not return the favor. Words kept coming to him as he drove to class this dreary morning. Prank, bully, pain, father. He shook his head. He couldn't think about that now. Couldn't think of how surreal it is to find out your life is a lie, that trust is a sickly, drooping weed that can be trampled or plucked to its death by any random passerby. He needed to focus today, focus on finding the truth. Figuring out who had played the sick joke that had fractured his family was his only mission, and he refused to rest until it was set to rights. He'd purposely arrived a half hour early. He wanted to be the first person here, to sit at the top of the stadium seating lecture hall so he could watch. Whoever had written the letter did it to evoke a reaction. They would be anxious to judge Jason's mood, to validate the rightness of their own atrocity, to satisfy their sick curiosity. He would be watching for interest, and that would be their tell, their undoing. The lights were off in the lecture hall when he walked through the door. Not even Professor Jenkins had arrived yet. Perfect. Jason climbed the stairs to the top, making his way across the aisle to the exact center. He plucked the travel pack of Lysol wipes out of his backpack. Public seating is a disgusting necessity for a college student. After decontaminating his area, he pulled out his old notebook and pen and set them on his desk. It felt like hours before the first group of people came through the door, six women. Every single one of them carried a Starbucks cup in their hands. They were all dressed nicely, with perfectly placed hair and fresh makeup. It wasn't even 8 a.m. yet. Freshmen. Not a single one of them noticed his presence as they made their way up the stairs to the middle row. They filed to their adjoining seats in a chatter of caffeine-induced energy. Shortly after they got settled, Jacob Denton bounded across the threshold. Jason clenched his jaw at the sight of his teammate. Jacob slithered up to the six lovely ladies and graced them with his wide, sleazy smile. He stopped at the end of the girls' aisle and chatted them up, likely hypothesizing which of them would be the easiest lay. Students filed in behind Denton, who was blocking Jason's clear view of the door. Finally, Denton moved. Jason's line of sight cleared, and there she was. Emily Marshall locked eyes with him, hers probing, his seeking, the connection almost a touch that stole his breath. "Tyndall, what the fuck you staring at?" Denton's voice broke the spell. A vein in Jason's neck pulsed while he flexed his fingers. He forced himself to ignore the asshole, choosing instead to pick up his pen and write Jacob Dickden on the open page of his notebook. No sooner had he finished writing it than he heard the voice that caused his teeth to gnash again. "Em, over here, baby, I saved you a seat." Jason jerked in his chair, his gaze roaming. Emily was standing at the end of his row, poised to head down the aisle toward him. She glared at Denton. "No thanks," she returned. Jason almost smiled. Denton stood and hopped over to his seat to Jason's row, landing right in front of her. "Come on, baby, don't be that way." Emily flopped down into the chair at the end of the row. "Ugh, whatever, just sit down." Denton sat next to Emily and started whispering something, but Jason couldn't make out what was said. Emily peeked at Jason as Denton continued to speak in her ear. "What's the prick saying to make her look my way?" Jason grabbed his pen and wrote Emily Marshall. "All right, everyone, sit down and let's get started," Professor Jenkins announced from the front of the room. As she lectured about poise and preparation and public speaking, Jason circled the two names he'd written on the page over and over. Answers stared up at him from the lined paper. Emily was in the same study group as Jason. She'd heard his account of his father, and she was seeing Jacob fucking Denton. She'd left his house 30 minutes before he found the letter. It was their doing. He knew exactly why Denton would want to mess with him, but why Emily? Because she had the opportunity? Because Denton knew Jason would be vulnerable around a beautiful woman? He didn't understand her part in all of it, but it didn't really matter. He had his answers. They sat a few seats away. Class flew by quickly enough, and as soon as it ended, Jason gathered his things. He could hear them whispering as he zipped his backpack. When Emily began to giggle, he glanced over. She was staring at him while she laughed. Proof. He stood and walked to the stairs on the opposite side of the row, away from the happy couple. As he slowly descended the crowded stairs, Jason contemplated his options. By the time he made it to the bottom row, he decided to approach them separately. Adrenaline had been the source of all the energy he expelled in practice this evening. After 2 hours of exertion, it had finally waned to a sort of anxious tic. When it was over, Jason collapsed on the ground of the practice field. He stared at the dark sky, searching for answers. His mind was as polluted as the thick film that hovered above the city, depriving its residents of illumination from the clusters of stars overhead and himself of clarity and peace of mind. Since he'd come to the realization this morning about the origin of the letter, he'd agonized over how to best approach the situation with Emily and Jacob. His first instinct was to punch Ditton in the dick and tell Emily to go to hell, but he was trying to dampen his temper. He and Ditton shared a past, and it was not a friendly one. Their last confrontation had almost caused him to lose his scholarship, and the last thing he needed was more drama in his life. That didn't mean his teammate had free rein to terrorize and intimidate him or anyone else. Sometimes the best way to defeat a bully is to be impassive, to take away their power. Sometimes they need their asses kicked. Indifference would have been easier had Mom not been affected by Denton's manipulations. But then, his enemy knew she was a soft spot. If Jason were less impulsive, he'd look for a way to turn the mind games around on Denton. But the only thing he had mustered the patience to do was to wait until the desire to make him bleed waned slightly. No. Oh, God. Mom's cries of horror rang in his ears as he made his way across the field to the locker room. By the time he burst through the door, head down, his hands were shaking. He didn't want to see Jacob Denton's smirk or his stupid, haughty eyebrows. Not until they were alone. He sat down on the bench in front of his locker and ripped apart the laces on his cleats. Prank. Bully. Father. Jason closed his eyes, screaming at the words in his head to shut the fuck up. Hey, Jason, you all right, man? Marcus Henley stood a few feet away, concern highlighted on his face. Marcus is one of a handful of players on his team who wasn't a narcissistic prick. They weren't exactly friends, but they were amiable toward each other. Jason turned his focus back on his shoes and nodded. You sure? You seem to mix between pissed as hell and jumpy out there tonight. Marcus was also one of the team captains. His concern was rooted in the overall morale of the team, not an interest in Jason himself. He nodded again. All right, man, I'm headed out. We all go into the steakhouse again tonight. Hope to see you there this time. Marcus left, and in his wake, Jason heard nothing. He took a deep breath. Silence was his sanctuary. When he'd changed and grabbed his bag out of the locker, Jason turned to leave. He needed a shower, anything to wash away this grime of apprehension. The thought of going home lightened Jason's black mood as he made his way to the exit. After rounding the last row of lockers, Jason stopped short. Jacob Denton was standing by the door, leaning against the wall with his arms crossed, glaring at Jason. We need to talk, Tindall. Jason's hands clenched into fists at his side. Yeah, we do. You need to stay the fuck away from Emily. She's not on the market, you get what I'm saying? I know she was at your house the other day. That shit stops now. Jason suppressed the urge to laugh. Denton thought he was moving in on Emily. If she hadn't been an accessory to Denton's fucked up games, Jason would have spent more time with her just to piss him off. I'll do whatever the hell I want to do, Denton. I'm not interested in Emily, especially after the stunt you two pulled, but you won't ever tell me who I can and can't spend time with. You get what I'm saying? Jacob's expression was guarded, yet assessing. What are you talking about? What stunt? It was as though oxygen flooded the dwelling where Jason's anger lived. So quickly the flames spread throughout his body. If rational thought had room to find him in this locker room, he would have been able to analyze his mood and make the right decision to leave. But the air was thick with dense tension that allowed nothing but wisps of fury to move freely about. Jason took a step closer to Denton. Two steps. He couldn't hear the rhythm of his staccato footfalls, nor the thumping of his heart as time seemed to slow. The only sound resonating in his head was Mom's maniacal laughter. Four steps. Five, six, seven. "Do you think fuck stupid?" His ears burned, and he had trouble finding his breath. He thought he may have missed a few things he'd meant to say. Words danced frantically in the charged air between them, but Jason couldn't catch a single one. Jacob smirked. "Well, yeah, but that's not the question here. What the hell are you talking about?" "I know the two of you planted the letter on my windshield. She was the only one with access, and she obviously has terrible judgment to be dating a piece of shit like you." Thankfully, all of that seemed to come out correctly. Denton's brows had furrowed while Jason spoke. He looked confused, but Jason was not naive. "What letter? Have you finally lost your shit, Tyndall? I knew it was just a matter of time before you went as wacko as your mom. Stay the fuck away from Emily and go get yourself some help. Jesus." Jacob Denton opened the door and walked through it. Jason was rooted in place. The inferno in his chest in the room rendered him powerless against the toxic fumes and licking flames. Smoke engulfed him, and he'd missed his chance for escape. Jacob had been standing there, the accelerant, and all Jason needed to do was snuff him out. But he'd balked. Denton had turned the table, made Jason seem paranoid for his accusations. And now he couldn't breathe through the thick smoke, a result of his hesitation. "Am I jumping to conclusions?" Jason balled his fist. "No." Denton was a manipulator, and that's what they do best. Turn their sins 180 degrees to make the victim feel crazy for daring to accuse them of wrongdoing. They plant doubt so they never have to face consequences for their actions. Fuck Jacob Denton. Jason punched the locker next to him, hard, so hard the door caved in. It was time to find Emily, and he needed to get her alone. In the time he'd shared classes with Emily Marshall, he'd heard enough conversations between her and her friends to know she worked at the coffee shop a few miles off campus. Jason pulled into the parking lot, hoping she worked tonight. He spotted her right away, sitting on the bench right outside the front door, alone. He'd parked in the corner farthest from her, then got out of the car with determination in his stride. Emily might have been cute and seemed sweet, but she was no master deceiver like her boyfriend. He would get the damn truth out of her, and then he would make sure she understood why he was nobody to be messed with. She was fiddling with her phone when he approached. The intensity of his anger had subsided on the drive to the coffee shop as he mentally prepared for what he needed to say to her. His nerves were still on high alert, though, and he couldn't seem to calm them. There'd been a tingle in the back of his neck since he left school today. It made him jumpy, vigilant. In the darkness of the parking lot, it intensified. He felt like he was being watched, like Denton would step from beneath the shadows at any moment and attack. His skin prickled, and he shook his hands out. "Emily." She jumped in her seat, her phone tumbling out of her hands. Her golden hair was a glowing halo above her head in the lights of the storefront. Glistening moisture shone on her cheeks and reflected in tiny droplets on the end of her eyelashes. "Oh, hi. You scared me. Sorry. Can we talk?" All of that came out in one breath, and the word "talk" was barely audible as all his air whooshed out. "Yeah, I'm on my break, so I have a few minutes. What's up?" Her eyes were clear. Whatever she'd been upset about before was gone for now. She looked around the parking lot and then glanced at the door to her left. He took a seat on the opposite side of the bench, staring at his hands, willing himself to be brave and stick to his guns. Why did I mean, did you put that letter on my windshield? He continued to steady his hands. He didn't want to look at her and stray from the words he'd practiced. I don't know what you're talking about. He nodded. Knew she'd deny it. He was sure Denton had made her promise to. Funny thing, Em. Right after you left my house the other day, there was a note stuck to my car. It said some pretty heavy shit. You really expect me to believe you and your boyfriend didn't do it to mess with me? Don't look up. Don't look at her. Look at our hands. She shifted from side to side. I didn't put anything on your car. I don't even have a boyfriend. I don't know who did it or why, but it wasn't me. Why would you even think that? He laughed. It was dry. It was a dry, loud bark, full of disbelief. She had the audacity to be indignant when they both knew she was the only one with not only the means, but also a proxy motive through her non-boyfriend. You mean, how do I know it? Well, for one, you are in Higgins' study group and heard me talk about my father that same day, which, by the way, was the first time I've spoken about him to anyone, ever. Afterward, you asked me if I wanted to study that night, at my house. You've not spoken a single word to me in the 2 years we've been at school together, but suddenly you want to come to my house? Oh, and then you get the bright idea to psychoanalyze each other for the project, meaning we'd have to spend more time together, meaning you get the opportunity to find out more personal details. He paused to catch his breath and his resolve. You leave minutes before I do, pissed off, and there's that fucking letter taped to my windshield when I leave. Not to mention, you're pretty cozy with Jacob Denton, who calls you baby, and the guy just so happens to hate me. He couldn't help but look at her. The only person I've had issues with at school and even before we started here just so happens to be someone you're close to. The one person who'd love to fuck with me is the guy you sat next to days later while you laughed your asses off and kept glancing at me. Now, seriously, Emily, how stupid do the both of you think I am that I wouldn't put it all together? Her mouth was open wide, her eyes large, rounded globes of astonishment. It took her minutes to respond, to move. Jason, I can understand that it looks that way, and... Well, if I were you, I'd probably think the same thing. She looked him right in the eye. I promise you, I did not put anything on your car. Jacob and I, we used to date, okay? When we first started college, but it only lasted a couple months. It was an agreeable breakup, and we have mutual friends, so we've spent a lot of time together over the course of school, but we aren't together. Ew, no, he's such an arrogant dickhead. She visually shivered. I barely manage to tolerate him most days, but I'm not into drama, you know? He's never told me anything about you. I didn't even know you knew each other. You're not exactly likely to have any sort of contact with one another because he's well-liked and has a million friends, whereas I am some idiosyncratic outcast. You put on a pretty show, Em, with your shivering and your bullshit. You aren't close? You certainly looked it. Her eyes softened. I was planning to sit next to you in class this morning. He got in my way and I didn't want to cause a scene. We were laughing about this crazy bitch who cheated on his best friend who now has some less than desirable sexually transmitted diseases. I know that sounds mean, but seriously, the chick is nuts. I asked if you'd help me study for our test because you're so smart. He raised a skeptical brow. The woman was laying it on a bit thick. Emily laid a gentle hand on his knee. I see your mind work through things in class when you get into discussions with our professors, and it made me want to, I don't know, try to get you to see how you're so knowledgeable and insightful about everything. The coolest part, though, is that like you're not afraid to express your opinions right there in front of everybody. It's like you own them. You're so assured. But you're also like open to other opinions and you can see many sides of every issue. It's not arrogance either. It's just truth. I wish I wish I had that confidence. I've been stressing about the next test we have. I already have to make up points for my last test by being in that stupid study group. The day when you had to sit on the hot seat, that day you went from this like figure that I admire to a human. This person who has doubts about himself and gets uncomfortable. I saw a man with feelings and a past. The way you talked about your mom, that was beautiful. I was just compelled when you were up there. That's why I ran after you. That's why I wanted to, you know, do the project together. It was like he'd run 10 miles. He was so out of breath. She wasn't done. But then you were a dick. I spilled something in your house. Boo flipping who. You got all worked up and angry just like that. You went from someone I wanted to get to know to just like all the other assholes I've ever known. I get you have issues or whatever, but you're a grown man. You think you learned how to not let it make you be a jerk by now. His lips parted while his mind paused to catch up. That diatribe was a bipolar roller coaster ride of emotion. He hadn't expected an admission of admiration or admonishment clinging to its heels. Her little speech was either appalling or exhilarating, and he had no idea why or which. I was a dick. You're absolutely right about that. And I apologize, though I know it's really late. And thank you for all the nice things you said about me, which I likely don't deserve. He cleared his parched throat. Emily's eyes were rounded. She leaned toward him, chin in hand, a tiny grin teasing her red lips. The thought hit him then, and he was angry at himself for almost falling for it. She had definitely learned the art of deception. Compliment the guy that nobody ever notices. He'll eat out of your hand. He stood up and his skin began to flush. He couldn't help the hushed deadliness of his tone. There's just one thing that doesn't make sense. You say you've been watching me? That you've been noticing me for some time? I'm supposed to believe you have some crush on me, but yet you can't understand how Jacob and I know each other? I play on the same fucking football team that he does, Emily. All those games you never miss, I am playing on the field in every one of them for 90% of the game. Yet you've been noticing me, right? You just so happen to skip over that very obvious detail. Nice try, but I don't believe a damn word of it. You know what I think? Hey, Jason, what's going on, man? A familiar male voice said from behind him. Jason turned, surprised at who stood there. What are you doing here? He asked, attempting not to sound as pissed off as he was. Xander shrugged. Oh, you know, I was just passing by and saw that beautiful Jeep of yours down near the road there. He pointed to Jason's parking spot. I thought I'd go in the shop and see if I could buy you a cup of coffee. Jason couldn't get a read on Xander, and that had bothered him from the first moment they met. Hey there, ma'am. I'm Xander. He stuck out his hand for Emily to take. She gave Jason a sideways glance before she took it and stood. I'm Emily. You a friend of Jason's? Yeah, we go to school together. I've got to get back to work. It was nice meeting you. She turned to Jason and glared. Jason, she clipped. Nice seeing ya. I don't care what you think. I didn't leave the damn letter. Xander waited until the door closed behind her before he spoke. Letter? It's nothing. Jason barked. All right. Xander clapped his hands and rubbed them together. How about that coffee? Jason sat at a table near the back, as far away from the other patrons as he could get. While Xander was at the counter ordering their drinks, Jason used the opportunity to get a good look at the guy who was dating his mom. Xander was impressively fit for his age. He seemed to have his life together. He was clean, respectful, and appeared to be successful. Before Mom had shown up for dinner at the restaurant on her birthday, Jason had grilled Xander about his job. He hadn't believed Xander when he said he was dating his mom, not working for her. In his entire life, he couldn't remember a single time his mother had been on a date. Not once. He had been sure it was due to the fact that she still mourned his father, that their love had been so deep and their bond so unbreakable it transcended mortality. That had been his truth for as long as he could remember. Now, well, Now he didn't know the meaning of truth anymore. When you find out your entire basis of reality is an utter farce, you realize truth is nothing but a pile of shit someone else has dealt you to satisfy their own agenda. He couldn't blame Mom. When she broke down that night, he knew in his gut something terrible had happened in her life that she'd never been able to completely forget. Upon reading the letter, he'd had the sick feeling his father had been involved in whatever it was. If the thought of his resurface terrified her so much, lying about his death had to have stemmed from the need to protect him, and he would never judge her for the choices and sacrifices she'd made on his behalf. He'd watched Xander with her the night of her birthday. She'd seemed vulnerable, almost shy. How eerie it was to witness that in the woman who had always been the very symbol of strength and wisdom. They'd had an almost tangible chemistry, and he'd been thrilled she'd found someone to make her smile. "Hope I didn't interrupt something important between you and Emily," Xander set Jason's drink in front of him. "Nope, we were just talking," Xander nodded. "You dating her?" Jason almost choked on his first sip of coffee. "Not at all. We have a few classes together, like she said. We were just clearing up a misunderstanding." "You guys clear it up? You sure have a lot of questions. Why does it matter?" Xander put his hands out, palms facing Jason. "Hey, I'm just trying to get to know you. I didn't mean to be intrusive." Though his skin itched from the questioning, what Xander was doing wasn't a bad thing. A man dating a woman should try to establish a relationship with her son. "It's fine. I'm just a private person." "I'm here, Jason. I know we don't know each other, and you have no reason to trust me, but you can consider me as someone who has your back. If I can do anything or help in any way, you know, with whatever, just let me know." It had crossed Jason's mind more than once the past few days. He'd ultimately decided against it because it seemed wrong, somehow. But Xander had just practically given him an invitation. "There is something you can do for me." He locked eyes with Xander. "What's up?" "You're a PI. You have skills and access to things I would never think of, and I could use your help with something." Xander shifted in his seat. "What are you looking for?" "I want you to help me find my father." Chapter 8. Deceit was a fast-spreading cancer that had quickly metastasized to Xander's inner core of morality. The past few days had felt like a long tumble down a rocky hill, overrun with half-truths and withheld information. No matter how many times he tried to stop the descent, momentum had continued to propel him downward. Now he sat in his truck, dizzy from the long fall, and not sure whether to check his ass or scratch his watch. He watched Jason hop into his Jeep after his last class of the day. He waited for Jason to pull out of his parking spot. Then he followed. Xander itched with the need to end this madness before it escalated any further. He was ready to get back to his routine, to stop intruding upon the lives of innocent people. People he now felt a connection to. There was something happening with JL and Jason that Xander hadn't quite figured out yet. It was a mystery he didn't want anyone else attempting to solve, which was the only reason he hadn't given it all over to Mike. He'd planned to give Mike's business card to JL and let him sort out the mess. But after spending time with her and Jason, Xander felt compelled to help or protect, whichever was needed. Jason pulled into the lot of Grounded Coffee and parked. Xander drove ahead and made a U-turn at the next light. When he circled back around, he pulled into the parking lot of a restaurant across the street. He watched as the kid walked toward the entrance to the shop with his head down. His hands were waving through the air as if in conversation. Xander was too far away to see if his lips were moving, but it looked like he was talking to himself or practicing a speech in his head. Jason entered the coffee shop, making Xander's heart race. When he'd followed Jason last night, he hadn't planned on interrupting the discussion between him and Emily. He'd been in Grounded's parking lot, making his view much better than it was now. He'd studied their body language and could hear bits and pieces of what sounded like a heated exchange. Only when Jason stood up with what appeared to be aggression had he decided to intervene. Whatever was happening between the two of them now, Xander could not see or impede, nor could he go in the coffee shop to witness it. Jason would know he was being followed, which was the last thing anybody needed. Only a couple minutes had passed when Xander decided he couldn't take not knowing. Jason hadn't seemed the type to get violent with a woman, but Xander wouldn't take the chance of being wrong like before. "You don't want to do that, kid." He grabbed his cell phone and dialed the number advertised on the entrance of the coffee shop. "Grounded Coffee, this is Chaz. What can I do for you today?" The voice on the other end sounded bored, hopefully meaning nothing was awry in the shop. "Yeah, hey Chaz, is Emily there today?" "Yep, give me a second and I'll get her." Xander wiped the sweat from his hands onto his pants. "Hello?" Emily's voice sounded calm. "Yeah, hi. What are your store hours today?"
6 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day, sir. Is that all you needed?"
No, I've never been there. Can you tell me what your specialty coffees are?"
Yeah. Can you hold on a sec?"
He heard chatter in the background. It sounded male, but he couldn't be sure, so he turned the volume on his phone all the way up.
"Thank you for stopping by, Jason. I'll think about it, okay?"
"I'll leave you to it. Have a good day, Emily."
"Bye."
He heard Emily sigh before she addressed him.
"Are you still there, sir?"
Xander ended the call. Jason strolled out of the coffee shop with his head held high. He marched to his Jeep and hopped in. It had only been a day and a half since Xander began following him, but he'd already surmised that Jason's life was defined by routine. Xander followed east toward Jason's home, where Xander was certain he'd stay the rest of the night. It was strange that he didn't seem to have any many friends. Emily had been the only person he'd witnessed Jason interacting with, and his social cues with her had been questionable at best. Despite his quirks, Xander had the gut feeling Jason was a good kid. Then again, his instincts had proved him wrong on more than one occasion. Bang, bang. Xander looked over to the two manila folders sitting in his passenger seat as he drove. One was labeled JL, the other Jason. Each time he looked at her name, something warm simmered in his belly. It was such a simple-looking word for a truly complicated woman, but it fit her perfectly, and though he'd pretended to spell it wrong on her birthday gift, he loved the way she spelled it, as interesting as the woman herself. Neither folder was overflowing, but one had noticeably more information than the other. Mike had been working on JL's case for a few weeks. Mr. Freeman had given practically zero information when Mike began his search for her. The only thing her father knew for sure was that JL had given birth to her son in the Nashville area and was likely living near Louisville now. Mr. Freeman had given them his daughter's name, but warned Mike she'd likely had it changed. Luckily, Mike had friends in Tennessee, and through process of elimination, he was able to find a Catherine Freeman who'd given birth to Jason Freeman when she was only 18. It had taken some more digging and a couple favors to powerful people to find out Jason Freeman's last name had been changed to Tyndall when he was 1 year old by his mother, J.L. Tyndall. Mike had been able to garner all the information Freeman had asked for after that. Over the last weekend, Mike closed the case, much to Mr. Freeman's dismay. Knowing Mike would likely not look for it now that the case was closed, Xander had pulled her file out of his partner's desk this morning. The other folder only contained a few notes and pictures of the kid. He was following Jason for JL off the books. There was really no reason to keep a file on him, but it was just a habit Xander couldn't break.
Also, he reckoned you never knew when you'd need to go back and look at something a second time. When Xander saw Jason pull into his driveway, he drove past and parked a few houses down the street. The sky had morphed into a magnificent blur of orange and pink. When Xander saw the Jeep pull out of the driveway, he followed. It only took 10 minutes to get to Jumbo Buffet. The restaurant sat at the corner of a large movie theater parking lot. Xander parked closer to the theater and watched as Jason exited his vehicle. Only minutes went by before he saw the familiar red Corolla pull in next to Jason. Xander sat up and leaned closer. He was acutely aware of the way his tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth and the thump of his pulse trying to break through the skin on his neck. When JL emerged from her car, the first thing he noticed was the unrestrained curliness of her long, black hair. It was thick and ample, and it swayed with the movement of her body. She was facing him when she greeted Jason. The way she smiled at her son made his chest all fidgety and warm. It was a beam of radiance and love. He couldn't help the small spark of jealousy pinging his gut. What he wouldn't have given to get just one of those smiles from his own mother. When JL broke free from their hug and began walking toward the entrance of the restaurant, she turned her head to Xander. The smile was gone, replaced by a stoic somberness tinged with regret. She stared at his truck as she walked and did not break the connection until she was through the door. He couldn't decide if he was relieved or ashamed that she'd noticed him here. It made sense that she would look for him when Jason was around, but he shouldn't have been so damn easy to spot. Perhaps he had lost his edge on sleuthing, but there may have been a small part of him that had wanted to be seen by her, to be noticed by the woman who didn't seem to give her time to anything or anyone outside of her small sphere of priorities. She wasn't smug or cold exactly. It was more like she had cultivated a careful calculation of guidelines that gauged trustworthiness. Xander couldn't help it. He had a hankering to pass her test, even though he knew he didn't deserve it. Countless times in the past week, he'd promised himself to come clean. The legalities of purposely breaking Mr. Freeman's confidentiality were not even the reasons he'd kept the truth from her. He'd tried to convince himself the Tyndalls needed his help, that nobody else would be able to detect the understated hint of danger lurking around them both. He'd told himself that no one would care enough to search all the shadows which seemed to hover over JL, and he was the only one who would be able to keep her and the boys safe. Hell, the truth was, it was all of that, and more. The sky had grown dark, making the shine of his headlights illuminate JL's skin as she stomped toward him. It looked almost gossamer against the long curls that draped over her shoulders and hugged her arms. She looked like a mystifying dark angel floating toward him. He had hoped to avoid her for a few more days at least. He hadn't garnered any noteworthy information on her son. Hadn't seen anyone lurking around that would present a danger to him. Jason had left the restaurant 5 minutes ago. Xander had started his truck, but a palm up from JL across the lot had stopped him from following the kid. His hands began to sweat as she drew closer. He took a whiff of the collar on his button down and grimaced. He'd been sitting in this damn truck all day, stewing in the humidity, bacon in the heat. He smelled like the ass end of a sweaty skunk. "Aren't you inconspicuous?" JL said in a mocking southern accent when she got close to his lowered window. He chuckled. "First of all, hello, JL. Second, he hasn't noticed me yet. Doesn't even know what my truck looks like. I noticed you the moment I pulled into the parking lot." "She did? Why are you smiling? Am I? Shit." "Yeah, but you knew what to look for, and you knew I'd be tracking him here." She narrowed her eyes. Actually, I had no idea you were going to be here. I didn't know you'd started following him yet. We haven't discussed what I want you to look for, or payment options, or anything, really. I told you there wasn't going to be a charge. She hugged herself. And I told you that wasn't happening. You said we'd talk about it later, but I haven't heard from you since Sunday evening. I had no idea you'd already started working. She shifted her weight from one leg to the other. I started Monday morning. I ain't billing you, JL. It's not even on the books at my firm. She paused. Why not? He sighed. Because if you wanted to hire us for private investigation, which you'd have to because there's no known or perceived physical threat right now, it would be my partner Mike or a member of his investigation team out here right now. I didn't figure you'd want someone you don't know watching your son. Plus, there has to be consent from the subject for our security services. That was mostly true. If she'd officially hired them, Xander could tell Mike he'd handle it, but he didn't want to answer all his partner's inevitable questions. Her shoulders relaxed, but she averted her eyes. Fine. What about the rest of it, though? You don't even know why I want him followed. Yeah, I do. You think someone is after him or stalking him. You feel that he may be in danger. He did his best to keep his voice soft, soothing. She snapped her head up, their eyes linking for one breath-stealing moment. Is he in danger? Not that I've witnessed so far. There's not been anyone following him except me. He don't exactly go places other than school that are crowded, so I think if someone is, it'll stand out. That hasn't happened yet, but it doesn't mean that it won't. But I'm watching him, though. Her hands were behind her back, but he'd noticed her body made the barest of movements when she fidgeted with her fingers, and he could tell she was doing it now. Seemed like some type of compulsion, which came out when she was anxious or scared. He hated himself for having witnessed it more than once. Some protector he was, right? No woman should be so nervous, so scared. There was some shit in her past. He could feel it. Something dark, perhaps. He had an almost undeniable impulse to find a way to illuminate her mind so she was never terrified of the darkness again. Hey, he cajoled. I'm also going to do everything in my power to protect him if he comes across any danger, okay? That's my specialty, JL, security. I'll be there and I will not fail you. She rocked back and forth, and the tortured expression in those caramel eyes of hers was enough to make his heart plummet to his boots. Her voice shook when she said, "It will mean my death if you do." "Fuck, what do you mean?" She looked away. Again, he fucking hated it. "Nothing. He's my world. I could not go on without him, okay? I need you to not fail the shit out of this." He tried not to smile. "Hey, is that you, Williams?" The interruption came from a male voice on the opposite side of his truck. Detective Tyler Mathis stood under the shining parking lot lamp a few feet away. Mathis was all gussied up this evening in one of his tailor-made suits and a black tie. He was on the job then. Xander glanced back to JL, who was watching the cop with intensity. "Yeah, it's me. How you been, man?" Xander replied, turning back to his old friend. Mathis leaned into the open window. When he spotted JL, his eyes widened. "Been good. I was just rolling by and saw your truck. Didn't mean to interrupt." Something was up. Xander knew Detective Mathis well. He was hiding something. "No worries. This is my friend JL. JL," he gestured to Mathis, "this is Tyler." She nodded. "Detective, did I mention he was a..." "Miss Tyndall," Mathis said her name like it tasted foul, and Xander was pretty sure he'd only introduced her by her first name. Interesting. "I'll leave you boys to it. Xander, Detective." She nodded to them both, but her eyes were on his, and they lingered. He watched her turn and leave. He didn't take his eyes off her until she was safely in her car, which took a little while, ritual and all. "Xander, man, you dating her?" "No. Why would you ask?" Tyler's eyebrows raised. There was some heavy tension there. And the way you watched her just now looks like something. Xander shook it off. He wasn't about to tell his friend about their business arrangement. How you two know each other anyway? Tyler shrugged. Through our kids. That made sense. They lived in the same county. But really, man, you two an item or something? Mathis asked. Why does it matter? Tyler rubbed his neck. She ain't, I don't know, she ain't exactly normal, you know? I mean, her kid went to school with the same kids his whole life, and she never made a single friend with any of their mothers. She always sat by herself at sporting events and school activities. When my wife and some of her friends tried to get to know her, she was all rude and distant. You're the first person, besides her son, I ever seen her interact with on a social level. Honestly, most people think she's a little off, you know, like not right in the head. As if the words weren't strong enough to wallop him in the gut, Tyler punctuated the assault by tapping his temples. Xander's pulse had begun to race the moment Tyler had said normal, and it was now so fast he could actually feel the adrenaline coursing through his body. I don't know what the hell a normal person is, Mathis. We all have our issues. You think she's crazy because she didn't enjoy the company of some silly women? You ever wonder why that was? Or were you too busy listening to your wife and her friends gossip about women who don't conform to their standards to form your own opinion? She ain't the kind of person who lives to please other people or care what they think about her. You think that makes her less somehow? You think that makes her not right in the head? I don't see it. Not at all. More people were like her, there'd be a lot less bullshit in this world to wade through. But no, we're not dating. I'm doing her a favor because I owe her. Mathis held out placating hands. I wasn't saying she's less. I think you know me a little better. I was just telling you how she's perceived because I thought it might be important to you, man. We go way back, you and me. I'm just looking out. Xander nodded. Southern women could be as bitter as they could be polite. Natasha Mathis had always been preoccupied with social statuses and gossip. She had a good heart, though, deep, deep down. Tyler was madly in love with his wife, and it wasn't Xander's place to question that. They'd been married close to 15 years. He supposed that after that many years of sleeping next to ice, it was bound to make you a little cold. Yeah, it's cool. Xander shrugged. Been a long day. Hey, you keep ditching out on me to play basketball, and I'm just going to show up at your house one day with a taser and throw you in my car. Mathis grinned, placing a hand on either side of the leather belt that cinched his slender waist. Like to see you try, old man. Mathis checked his watch. I gotta get back to work. Basketball. Soon. Xander nodded. Mathis turned to leave. Hey, Tyler. Mathis stopped short, turning back around. What's up? You known the Tyndalls a while then? I wouldn't say I know them, but yeah, Tyler said. You know anything about her kid's dad? I'm such an opportunistic prick. His brows furrowed. Nah, never seen her with any man. We all assumed he was dead or in prison. I can look into it if you want. No, not necessary. I was just curious. You sure, man? No big deal. Yeah, I'm sure. I'll see ya. All right. After Tyler Mathis left, Xander turned up the stereo and reclined in his seat. His head was killing him, but he needed the tunes to drown out everything running through his mind. He'd gotten himself into some shit in his life, but this was the first time he'd felt truly lost. There were so many unknown factors, so much he didn't understand. Xander hit the steering wheel with the palm of his hand, hating this feeling. He was lying to two people now, two people who were as lost as he was. But he was also trying to protect both of them. From whom? He had no idea. All right, all right, all right. So that was chapters 7 and 8. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Something, a little note I made. I'm finding that as I am narrating, I'm naturally kind of doing a voice for each character. I don't think that they're uniform. Like, I don't think all of the JLs I've done have been the same, or like all the Jasons have sounded the same. So if I'm confusing the shit out of you guys, I am sorry. I'm not even meaning to do it. It just kind of comes out. Plus the way it's written, and they're very country, and it's written to be that country. The dialogue is not the narrative, but the dialogue. So it's kind of hard to speak the way that it's written without a voice or an accent or a different inflection. So I'm finding that I'm naturally doing it, which is super fucking scary, because if you've read Where the Shadow Lies, then you know that there's a character named Gran who is fucking country as hell. So, and like, she's over the top country. So that's coming up. Her chapter where she talks a lot is coming up. So, I'm probably going to have to do a lot of re-recording and erasing and editing when that happens, because, ooh, man, she is a Southern woman for sure. So anyway, thanks for sticking around, guys. I hope you enjoyed chapter 7 and 8, and we will do 9 and 10 next time. See ya.